Christoph Mata, yeah. And as Carol already said, he cannot be here. He sends you his greetings, wishes you well, and thanks the organizing committee for the invitation and for the possibility to do this arrangement that Thomas and I give the presentation in his place. And Christoph has provided extensive material, a comprehensive draft. You may be wondering why we do not give more credit to him for this. It's simply so that we could not interact with Christoph on what we did with that material, and we just want to make sure that he doesn't get blamed, that he doesn't deserve for things that we have introduced and he wasn't would agree with. Much of what we know about BE stars is still encapsulated in single star studies, and these studies are of course very labor intensive, very difficult to arrange, and you always have the question whether the results are representative of BE stars at large. And certainly one way to alleviate these problems are surveys, and the results of surveys also interface in a way more easily to models than just observations of a single star. For surveys, one should distinguish between two broad categories. One is to search for BE stars, and the other one, the characterization of specific properties of samples of BE stars that you already know as BE stars. And many of the latter surveys are very small in number, and if you compare the number of the objects with the 325,000 stars that were part of the Bonner Durchmusterung, which was finished 150 years ago, there is still some room for extension. Now, this is of course driven by the fact that BE stars are variable in all their key observables, and the variability is irregular, so it's not easy to combine data from different epochs. And this, of course, then also leads to all kinds of statistical atrocities. In many other fields of science, BE star samples would not pass, not even for an undergraduate student, whereas we have to live with them. And so the outline of the talk and how Thomas and I have decided to split up the work is shown here. And we then quickly move on to searches for BE stars. And the question where to search for BE stars is an easy one, because BE stars is where the star formation action is in galaxies and star clusters. A somewhat more complicated question is what to search for in survey data to identify BE stars. And that, of course, depends on the definition that you use for BE stars. Classically, the definition was purely empirical. And then only recently, Thomas, Alex, and Christoph have shown more courage and say, we believe that we understand better today what a BE star is physically. And we incorporate this and add this to the definition of BE stars. And don't worry, I don't want to read the table for you. Just look at this column. These are all the parameters that appear in today's definition of BE stars as proposed by the three authors. And you see most of them can be used for the searches identification of BE stars. Only very few are a little bit esoteric. And when you then look at the column with the false positives, there are not many and they are all different. So if you're really desperate to identify stars as BE stars or not, don't agonize over this. It is easy to do. And this is a compilation of surveys that are available in the literature. And again, I will not go through this list here in this talk, but maybe the website for the working group Active BE Stars is a place to deposit it. One thing one can remark is that these are still all isolated works and people have not made an attempt to cross-identify catalogs, sources and catalogs, or merge them. That is certainly something that would be quite meritorious to do in the future. In addition to the criteria in the definition of BE stars that we have seen, we have also seen that light curves of BE stars may possibly be useful to identify BE stars. And there's one aspect one could add to this. If these light curves are due to outbursts, then this might be a chance to find more Mersenne-like stars which owe their mass loss ejection to the beating of different modes. And if these outbursts are quasi-periodic, this could be the beat period of two or more non-radial pulsation modes, so that would be worthwhile analyzing. There are quite a few survey facilities on the horizon, and what for BE stars, all of them have in common, and the potential that they offer, is the possibility to go to environments with a different metallicity, and that's of course a very important addition to the parameter space in which we can explore and characterize BE stars. And some such effects are already known, especially for the stars, and where we know, believe to know on theoretical grounds, that metal poor stars are more compact, and because they have less wind driving and less mass loss due to low metallicity, they can maintain more of the angular momentum. And both effects mean that low metallicity stars should rotate faster than high metallicity stars. And in fact, Christoph and his collaborators have verified this, and the frequency of BE stars increases from the Milky Way via the Large Magellanic Cloud to the SMC. But there are also very big variations from cluster to cluster in each of these galaxies. And when the first publication appeared that the frequency of BE stars depends on metallicity, I thought this was very courageous because of these cluster variations. And there must be another parameter, and that was recently identified by Iqbal and Keller. And you see here that for the for the Milky Way, the frequency of BE stars is relatively small and does not depend very much on age. But say for the SMC, which are these points here, the dependency on the age is at least as large as the dependency on the difference in the metallicity between the Milky Way, the LMC, and the SMC. And this is just a reminder that in photometry, you have a degeneracy very often, depending on the passband that you use, between age and metallicity. And one has to be aware of this. For the disk of BE stars, the situation is somewhat less clear. And obviously, it's important that one understands the metallicity dependence of the appearance of BE disks, because otherwise the conclusions that you draw about the distribution of the central stars as a function of metallicity becomes flawed. And in a couple of years ago, Wisniewski et al., in their own words, speculated that in the SMC, BE disks are either smaller or hotter than in the galaxy. And this has then been checked by Halonen and Jones. And they say, well, if you have fewer metals, you have less absorption of flux from the central star, there's less heating. But there's also less cooling because you have fewer transitions that contribute to this. So by and large, these two effects cancel out. Ahmed and Sigurd have done similar calculations, and they find that at the same effective temperature of the central star, the disks with lower metallicities should be hotter by several thousand Kelvin. In addition, they can reproduce the distribution of the equivalent width in the Milky Way and the SMC as compiled by Christoph Martin and his collaborators reasonably well. So that might be supportive evidence that there really is such a difference. We have already heard quite a bit about the binarity of BE stars, and everyone agrees that the frequency of binaries among BE and non-BE stars are about the same. Short orbital periods are infrequent among BEs, and in particular are no BE stars known to be interacting binaries. We also have no evidence that when a BE star is approached by a companion that this triggers an outburst. So there the binarity is of little importance. There are few systems where a BE star has been found to have an SD O companion, a subdwarf O star. These stars are very faint and therefore difficult to detect, therefore there may be more. In particular, it is very plausible that in the earlier evolution of these systems, the B star has been spun up by mass transfer from the progenitor of the the O star. And so the BE phenomenon certainly has a contribution from binarity, but binarity does not generally explain the BE stars, at least not the current binaries. And of course, BE stars may be just the tip of an iceberg from earlier times, maybe survivors and descendants of an original population with much higher binarity. And for instance, there could have been similar objects to the X-ray binaries and their progenitors. And they could all have been blown up in supernova explosions, which would then have made the BE star unbound, and they should have a large space velocity, and this is not observed. Likewise, a rapid rotation could have resulted from very early mergers, and then you would expect abundance anomalies, and Thomas will show you one example of what might be the product of such an evolution. And one would also expect that a certain number of these stars then develop a dynamo and have a magnetic field. And Greg would tell us that BE stars do not have any large-scale magnetic fields. So the conclusion is the BE phenomenon is not a general binary phenomenon. Then for the evolution, models had to be expanded, have been expanded, to cover rapid rotation. And they're concerned basically with three questions. What is the difference that occurs with rapid rotations? How can the differences be observationally verified? And where does a rapid rotation come from? Now, before one does such a comparison between theoretical results and observations, one has to be clear what comparisons are made. And everyone knows that a BE star is a rapid rotator. And a BE star is very easily identified by means of the emission line. Whereas if you have a rapidly rotating B star without an emission line and you look at it pole on, you don't see that it's a rapid rotator. You never include this in such a comparison. But we must be aware that BE stars may be special, that they differ from the general population of rapidly rotating stars for a number of reasons. And therefore, BE stars may not be very good benchmarks for comparison with theoretical models. And so we should keep this in mind when we now move on to discuss these three questions. So the first one is, what difference does rotation make on the evolution of massive stars? And we have heard about the von Zeipel effect a couple of times. Basically, that leads to a breakdown of the internal thermal equilibrium of the star, and that induces two effects. One is meridional circulation that is trying to restore the thermal balance, thermal equilibrium, and there's differential rotation, which then triggers strong horizontal turbulence and horizontal shear. And the combination of these effects has a number of secondary effects, which partly are observable, or at least expected to be observable. One is you have more radial mixing, dredge up of nuclear burnt material from the core. Because you have more mixing, you also have more fuel, and you can the stars then live longer. Because of the stronger coupling between the core and the envelope, you also have a spin up of the surface layers of the star. And finally, you should expect increased abundances. And because abundances increase, you may have more radiative driving, so you re-increase after a while the mass loss rates. So for the verification, one of the standard outputs of evolutionary models are evolutionary tracks. And when you look at the differences between no rotation and very rapid rotation for an intermediate mass range, for an observer, the differences are not very large. This is not something that one would like to be forced to see and to find, because you have to use many clusters, which will then inevitably differ in the age, in the metallicity, in the foreground reddening, and so forth. So to compile a uniform database is very laborious and very tricky. And on top of this, this is all aspect dependent, and you do not know what the aspect angle is of every individual star. So the cost to benefit ratio of an attempt to verify such a prediction seems rather low to me. The frequency of extreme rotators, of course, here plays a big role. What fraction of rapid rotators you have. The Geneva group, Anahi Granada et al., have used photometric data from Jeannie McSwain and Doug Geis, which are shown here for different environments. These are BE stars, and these are candidate BE stars, and this is for the galaxy. And as a function of time, they produce in their models a prediction of how many stars should have a rotation rate that is not more than 90% of the critical. And there are many stars who are below 0.9 and above 0.7. So the critical rotation rate that is predicted by these models is relatively low. And one would not expect that critical rotation is a strong requirement for the BE phenomenon. Rapid rotation, yes, but not critical rotation. Huh? And the verification is challenging because you will encounter quite a few statistical biases. I have mentioned the spin-up. Initially, you have a spin-down for every, in almost every, at every rotation rate that you have at the beginning. Meridional circulation then leads to a spin-down, and only at the highest rotation rates you have this coupling between the core and the envelope, and the rotation rates would then increase during the evolutionary time scale. But this is something that is very difficult to verify, and so the verification potential is limited. And finally, for the checks on the evolutionary models, the surface abundances, and the models by Nahi et al. Suggest that the abundance enhancement of nitrogen can be very large in SMC-like environments. Now, this is to be compared to observations by Dunstall et al., who do not find any difference in the metallicity between B and BE stars in SMC and LMC, and they conclude that the critical rotation phase, if it occurs, cannot last long, more than 10 or 20% of the main sequence time. Otherwise, one would see the abundance enhancement. And Christophe and others find that, on the other hand, BE stars already exist very early on in the zero main sequence evolution. And so the question is again, are BE stars critical rotators, or do they rotate significantly below the critical rotation, and therefore the verification is critical? And Thomas will tell you more about this in part two. The rapid rotation can be acquired, of course, and by a number of processes. Two require a companion, and we said binarity is not very important for BE stars. And the other two depend on the supply of angular momentum from the core. And so therefore, you would conclude that for near critical surface rotation, you probably need such a large reservoir, and you better find ways how to form BE stars as intrinsic rapid rotators. And therefore, one can ask in a speculative way the following, with emphasis then on the single star scenario, that the rapid rotation is primordial, and what you form are primarily quasi-single stars. And recall what I just said. Christophe finds BE stars arrive already on the zero-age main sequence with rapid rotation, so their BE nature is innate and not fundamentally acquired. And the BE stars are mostly quasi-single. So one has to ask the question whether there is a formation channel that enables BE stars to form without sharing the angular momentum with a companion. And normally, high angular momentum, is an impediment to accretion. But there are many examples in the universe that show that this can be bypassed. And the recipe is always the same. namely you form jets. You have the jets in AGNs, you have the jets in collapsars, and one could have something similar also in the formation of massive stars. And then one might also get some understanding why the BE phenomenon does not extend to very high stars. And Stan, you suggested that this is the wind which blows away the disks. But in the O stars, you don't have this very high, very rapidly rotating population of stars, so you would not form a disk in the first place, even if you cannot let it survive against the wind. And so that might be other circumstantial evidence that such questions are right. Then the final point for the evolution, what happens with BEs, BE stars, when they are finished with their life as BE stars? And the only evolutionary stage that implicitly seems to require rapid rotations are the collapsars, in the model by McFadden and Woosley, which also assumes low metallicity and an initial mass in excess of 15 solar masses. So Christophe et al. Have then argued that if you use a high mass end of BE stars in SMC-like populations, then you find a GRB rate that is comparable to the available statistics that looked quite convincing, but in the meantime, the requirements on the metallicity in the environment of where LG long GRBs blow up has been eroded. So this is no longer so strong, and it's not so clear. I quickly go through this. It would be very beneficial to merge databases. Binarity is perhaps not very important for BE stars. Metallicity, we have some incipient understanding of the effect of metallicity on the stars, and we must be aware of the degeneracies between metallicity and age. For the metallicity effects on the disks, there is still more work to be done. And these are two important points perhaps to remember. For the evolution, it is questionable whether BE stars at large are a very good proxy for the general population of rapidly rotating stars. I think it would be wise in surveys to always include some BN stars for comparison. Current models are challenged with a fraction of nearly critically rotating stars and the nitrogen surface enrichment. We have the question whether single stars can be preferentially formed from a rapidly rotating cloud. And it's not clear whether anyone needs BE stars when they are dead. Thank you very much. And Thomas will now take over.
You can put this in your pocket, and depending on if you're in your voice.
Thank you. Let me skip the title. So let's first continue a bit with rotation. Now we have seen this a lot, that these two figures. The question used to be settled 20 years ago at 80% critical until these observations and this theoretical result popped up. This is Armando showing Achanar rotating basically critical, and this is Rich et al. Showing that the 80% here is an upper limit only to the observational determination of the rotation rate, not necessarily to the rotation rate as such. However, now 10 years after, we may be close to settling that, because Achanar has been reobserved very thoroughly. We have seen that as well. And the new result, it's rotating at 88% of critical velocity, or if you translate this to the Keplerian, at at the surface is 84%. Also, there's a study with interferometry which enables you to derive the inclination independently, and if you then use the V sine I measured in these stars, inject the inclination, etc., and also adapt, then you end up with 75 to 85% Keplerian in all these stars. So there is not significantly above. And if you then,
can you explain what changed?
Huh?
What changed between the first and the second observation?
Why
did it come down?
Basically, these observations was taken at a time when there was a small residual circumstellar disk, and it also was a two-beam combiner, which doesn't produce as much data. In particular, it only produces visibility and not phases or closure phases. And if you take all this into account, then you end up with this model. There have been more studies on rotation, and if you make a meta study of them, if you read them all and try to find what is find a common image in them, then you end up with the following result. The mean rotation is about 75 to 85% Keplerian. It's independent of the subtype. However, generally one studied clusters and find BE stars only above a certain rotation rate. There are no more B stars above this rotation rate. So you can combine this into two sentences. A B star can become a BE star if it rotates about 70%, and this is the same for all subtypes. But a B star must become a BE star if it rotates above 70% for early types, but if it rotates 95% for late types. So that this does depend on spectral time, and this does not tell us something. There is either one mechanism that is changing efficiency from early to late, or there are several mechanisms that are changing balance between early and late. And also, just to put back the metallicity, this is by Christophe Mathéa. He studied clusters in the clouds, compared with the galactic data, age distance, computing back to the rotation at the zero age main sequence, and he found there's a clear trend in rotation that the SMC is faster than the LMC, is faster than the Milky Way, so there's a clear metallicity effect in rotation of BE stars.
Ruby, could you just go back to your last slide for 1 second?
That one?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Now the link to rotation are the surface abundances. This here is a diagram of how surface abundance of nitrogen should enrich for the star of a certain V sine I. That is a population synthesis of the nitrogen enrichment. And this here goes up to 350, meaning if we take VE stars, they are somewhere here normally. Now this theory, as far as I know, has been calibrated, however, only for low and moderate V sine I. So the high V sine I region, or the high V region actually, is extrapolated from these calibrations. And we need to verify it if this is the case. With single BE stars, there are several studies which find them unmixed. There are two BE stars in NGC 330 in the SMC, and they lack any sign for rotation mixing. These are narrow line BE stars, so in theory it's actually easy to find the nitrogen lines and measure them, but they have strong emission, which might be a problem. Then they have been two studies with IOE data, little to no rotation mixing in nitrogen, and this study also find no depletion actually of the carbon lines. On the other hand, there have been two BE stars which are mixed. However, this one is so much mixed that it cannot be possibly the result of rotational mixing, because some of the enriched elements wouldn't even form in a star of that mass. So that must be the result of a binary evolution. Zeta off is probably the same, because the enrichment is pretty much higher than expected for its evolutionary state. And as Dietrich already pointed out, there was the survey of Dunstall of 30 BE stars, which if they take into account properly the contamination by the emission, etc., this would be the expected enrichment, and if they correct for the emission, this is where they end up. In the LMC, even the uncorrected nitrogen is below where it should be for the rotational rates. So, The observer's task now is to really bring that result home. BE stars are not mixed. For this, we need the best current models versus the best current data. There are posters and talks here. And then we have two hypotheses. As Dietrich have said, BE stars rotate slowly most time on the main sequence, as low as 30, 40. The critical rotation phase is short. But then maybe all BE stars, all B stars must become BE stars, or in the worst case, even more than all must become BE stars to explain that. The hypothesis two, which in my opinion is the more appealing one, is the inhibition of mixing at the highest V sin I. That somewhere above the model calibration, things go wrong, and the mixing does not work anymore with the same physical process, but is inhibited. Okay, let's go on to pulsation. Make this quick. That is the residuals of omega Canis, of omega CMA, which has been modeled with a strong single period in the single mode L equals 2, retrograde M equals 2. So you see that the model for all different lines works fairly well. And not only that, but if you look, if you take that same model and look at it at different inclinations to reproduce the V sin I of some other BE stars, this is omega CMA again, this is a very, very narrow lined, broader lined, very broad lined. No. Then you end up that the model for omega CMA actually can also, at least qualitatively, explain all these other stars. And it can, in fact, explain basically 80% of the BE stars where you find pulsational line profile variability.
They're all the same L, though.
Yeah, L equal to M equal plus 2.
So 80% of the stars can be explained by a retrograde mode.
Yes. Yes, that's how it looks like. I'll go on the prograde retrograde question a bit later. And also the surveys, in this case the spaceborne photometry view, says all these stars are pulsators. They are multiperiodic BE stars. Between a few and more than 30 periods are being found. I have marked in red those where the amplitude maxima coincide with outburst, meaning the the circumstellar disk is fed when the amplitude is high. And on top of this list, there is 18 BE star in the Corot field. Okay, maybe accept this. And generally, the frequency spectrum shows a forest of frequencies around one or two mains, and as well as several isolated ones. So now, pro or retrograde? The surface appearance modeling, that's what I showed in the first part, points to retrograde sectorial mode. The seismology modeling points to a prograde mode. Now, which is right? In my opinion, the modeling from seismology, excitation modeling, isn't at the point where it could say this with a degree of certainty as we can say from the surface modeling. So, but that does not mean it has to be right. The surface appearance model at the moment do not properly model some modes. Like for instance, they only model the prograde G modes. What Dylan has shown, this retrograde particle velocity, prograde phase velocity, that would look different. And whether it is that, we have to see. We have to model first before we can say. And not all frequency, let me mention that, not all frequencies seen in these stars need to be pulsational. Some of these might be indeed the rotational period or the periods of star of material orbiting the star just above the stellar surface. Still, BE stars are non-radial pulsators. Magnetic fields? In the modeling, what we use to explain that is usually, say, 20, 10-ish, 20-ish.
Sound speed.
Yeah, close to sound speed. But these are G modes, large scale. So, magnetic fields, again, the status in about 2010 was there was an incentive for magnetic field search because from disk formation hypothesis, angular momentum could have been transported by leverage, and there was some observational evidence for co-rotating features and for the rotational periods being seen. There were then several marginal field detections, and by marginal I mean worth further investigation. Here's a list. However, of these lists, Some were thoroughly investigated and the fields were, could not be confirmed. And actually the marginal findings with the FORCE 1 instrument, all these are with the FORCE 1 instrument. This here was by Musikos, thank you. And the marginal fields findings with FORCE 1 have come under general criticism that with FORCE you should actually probably go for a higher threshold than just 3 sigma to be on the safe side. And indeed, then the MIME survey did it with Espador and Narval and Habsburg. The MIME survey is completed and there's no BE star detection reported with a magnetic field, which means, if you hear that from Greg in some detail, if BE stars were as magnetic as B stars, they would have been seen. So BE stars are less magnetic than B stars. And also the BOB survey by Hubrig et al. Is ongoing, and so far they have not reported any BE star detection. So let's get back to the angular momentum transport, for which magnetic fields were favored in the beginning. As Stan has shown, Keplerian disk formation needs highly fine-tuned parameters, if it works at all, probably not. So an outflowing disk would form with a magnetic field, at least with a large-scale one. And how is it done then? Well, we don't know. But let's take home that angular momentum cannot be injected in pure form, which meaning you can't just take angular momentum and put it into the material in the disk. Doesn't work. What you have to do is you take the material, you accelerate it, you put the material in the disk. That is the only way to put angular momentum in the disk. Okay, and now viscosity. That's, you have also seen a lot, that is again omega CMA. Actually I oscillate between naming it 28 and omega, but it's the same star. Here you see the long-term evolution of the V magnitude. And here, well, this is probably some scatter from the old times, not very well defined, but this here is quite okay, well defined. And actually, it extends here. You have here a major outburst, you have here a major outburst, but it sits on this downhill slope. So what that does mean? If all of this here is viscous and this here is viscous, why are the time scales so different? Because remember that when Alex did this decay, which is actually just the end phase of that here, new observations after here, this decay has been modeled with alpha 1, but it is the decay from a fully developed disk. Meaning the disk here is full with matter. So, and this takes 3 years. There's no way you can make it last longer than 3 years, because the disk is full and here is empty. But of course that doesn't fit with that slow decay. So what do we have? In the decay of the disk, maybe it isn't viscosity, as Stan has pointed out. Carol Grady found that in the late 80s that the winds of BE stars are enhanced at intermediate inclinations, not at polar ones, which means it is above the disk. Also, Telting et al. Found the wind strength in the V2R cycle of gamma CAS correlates with the phase in the V2R cycle. When the density enhancement is rotating towards you, the discrete absorption component are much stronger than it when it rotates away. So he argued that when it comes towards you, the disk must come off the disk and go into the line of sight. But then on the other hand, if this is radiative ablation, why do we, in Alex's work and also in Leandro's work, why do we find alpha to have an upper limit at 1? Because that is a natural upper limit only for turbulence. For radiative ablation, it could be anything. And I've seen there's an attempt to actually to explain this here with re-injection. There's a poster outside by Alex Rub, by Mohammed, and that at different timescales can be explained by re-injection. The material does rain back so quickly, but you put it back immediately by a continuous outburst on a lower level than in the big outbursts. But this effectively lowers the amount of the re-accreted masks and keeps a tenuous disk. But I think that only works for one parameter. As soon as you look for other parameters, like other colors even, or spectroscopy, you will find that is probably not the case. And even if that is a tuning that would be okay for one object, but I wouldn't feel very comfortable for more than one object, and there are more, many more. Because this type of light curve, where you see a long decay and short ones, this is very common in the macho light curves. So this here is one, this here is another one where it's even more pronounced. And maybe I'm making things up, maybe I'm the only one to see this, but there has to be fit, but maybe in this one, you even see something that the time scale is breaking from fast to slow in that one. Okay, I have to fit it, I haven't done that yet, but we have to see. And so there might be a solution. The observational facts are the rapid decay in omega CMA, but the disk is not fully gone afterwards. There's still H alpha emission, there's this slow ramp going down. Only the inner disk is well cleared. That we can say from spectroscopy. There's a similar behavior seen in other stars like 66 of Yuki and Ogle. And we know that the late type BE star disks are less variable. There have been statistical studies and they are more stable. The early types really are far more variable than the late types. So the question is this less feeding variation? Is this less radiative ablation? Or is it lower viscosity? So an ad hoc model might be, or an ad hoc idea to explore might be, do disks have two different regions, two different domains? For instance, if you have the instability driven by radiation or something like it or something else, something that drives alpha high by radiation. And that would lead to a radially variable alpha, optically thin and thick region maybe. So you may end up with two regions in the star, the inner optically thick region in which this radiation triggers a high variability, high instability, a high alpha. And then you would have a high alpha there, while in the outer region, where this radiation instability or whatever triggers a high alpha does not work, you would have a region where the alpha comes down to the more traditional value of below 0.1 or so. Which brings me to my conclusions. In rotation, I think we are on the road back to the consensus that BE stars rotate 70 to 75% Keplerian upwards, might rotate close to critical, but that seems to be a lower limit for the BE star rotation. It's still not clear what does the mass ejection and the angular momentum feeding. However, it's probably more than one process with an efficiency or balance of processes changes with spectral pipes. And that's important. That's why the viscous disk actually works. Or what the, once the matter from the ejection is settled in the disk, the memory of how the disk was formed is lost. From this point on, it evolves in a viscous fashion. So are the most rapidly rotating stars different? That is, all studies point to unexpected result with respect to CNO abundances. So there might be an inhibition of rotational mixing for the most rapid rotators, and this could have wide implication outside the domain of BE stars. And this is why I think that there are careful studies needed in the next couple of years. We have the data, we do have the models, so we should do it. And something like a local Milky Way survey equivalent to the flame survey as done by Dunstall should be done. Stellar pulsation, I think it's firmly established now that BE stars are non-radial pulsator. The satellite photometry has, there are numerous data sets to work on. Unfortunately, the theory is quite far behind because, as I asked Rich, we are not in any position to... Rich? No, he's sleeping. Oh, yeah. As I asked you, theory of pulsation is not in any way able at the moment to interpret the results as we do for slowly rotating star seismology-wise. And the relation of the pulsation to disk feeding remains open. Magnetic fields is just... At least for large-scale dipole ones, there are none. The small-scale magnetic fields are still possible, but I think Greg will show you that also for those we can put limits. And so in the disk properties, we are basically stuck with the questions, why the high viscosity? We should, as we have seen, the pure photometric surveys might not be enough to answer the question. It might give you leeway to include different solutions. And so I would say that you really need to have photometry in various colors and at least here and then a snapshot of a spectrum. In order to do this, it would be, for the Ogle and Macho service, hugely worthwhile to have a cross-identification for the LMC and SMC service, for the various ones, the spectroscopic ones and the photometric ones. And so the question is now, the rapid decay is either not viscous or it's with an unusually high viscosity. So some instability may drive the turbulence high, which is favored maybe by the fact that alpha isn't much larger than 1, and 1 seems to be the natural upper limit. Or is it some other process? And I think with the Ogle database, we have a good handle to get a statistical survey type limit on this. Thank you.
Firmly object to your statement that BB stars that is firmly established have non-radial pulsations, or that non-radial pulsation be formally included in a definitional sense of BB stars. The original Collins definition of BB star referred to somebody having once seen H alpha in ignition, either in the past or contemporaneously with the BB others. One cannot make that statement for non-radial pulsations. There are for non-radial pulsations. There are certainly BB stars that have been well observed that do not show non-radial pulsations, and therefore I don't see how one can include that in the definition.
There are,
even though it might physically be a typical, a common, even typical process.
Of all BE stars observed in space-borne photometry, about 40, the number of non-radial pulsators that has been found is 0. So we have a statistics of 0 to 40, and I think that justifies
all
the statement.
Need is one counterexample. Rebe gamma Cass is a counterexample. It has been well observed from the ground.
Actually, and to your point, it's in the definition. It's not. That was in the review very clear. The definition, the old definition, is intact. This physical definition Dietrich has shown is rather a corollary to the definition. If you have a classical BE star, that's how it's physically looked like, but it's not part of the definition.
I didn't understand that statement.
A definition shouldn't, I agree, a definition.
Not alternative.
Yeah.
The two definitions are not alternative.
I agree, a definition shouldn't include physical parameters.
A classical prototype of
Well, a prototype is never like the serial model.
And we should continue this part of the discussion later. Is there anything else? Rich?
In regards to your interesting question about high viscosity, something that occurred to me from looking at Dylan's simulations was that, I mean, his simulation showed when he shut off the pulsation, there's a rapid drop in the disk mass of disk density and then a slow decline. And what might be causing that is during the pulsational drive, you have wave pressure is partly supporting the disk. When that wave pressure is removed, the disk, some significant fraction of the disk, rapidly reaccretes, and then the rest of it accretes via viscous processing. So that's another possibility.
That's a good point, because what you're really saying there is if the other waves support the disk, then it would be sub-Keplerian. On some small level, it's up Keplerian. And then as soon as you remove the other extra support, gas pressure. It's hard to make pulsational pressures and support be much more than gas pressure.
But you only need a little bit.
Okay.
Okay.
Great. Nitrogen abundances. Do you really think they're good enough to make any useful statements?
What?
Yes.
Do you really think they're good enough to make any useful statements?
I think the Dunstall et al. Study is, and I have also started modeling this with Fernanda Nieva and Norbert, and also they come to the conclusion that they are surprisingly solar.
If Norbert and Fernanda believe it,
I believe it. Maybe we have time for one more quick question.
You explained that in the Magellanic Cloud you have more B stars because the melanctality is lower due to the fact that you don't have such strong stellar winds.
But the stars are more compact.
Yeah, but in the wind in the viscosity model there is no room for wind at all, you know, not in the equatorial region nor neither in the polar region. So how you can reconcile the two pictures, you know, of relative winds and viscosity equation?
I don't think that, that the BE phenomenon is strongly coupled to winds, and therefore you don't have the requirement to drive winds in low metallicity environments. We don't know what
the other way around.
Yeah. The winds are disk killers and not disk creators.
Okay, well, let's thank our speakers again.